Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Down the Tube, Really Random Stuff with Miss Darko, brought to you by A Team of Voices. A Team of Voices is a group located on allpoetry.com. the largest poetry site in the world. It's free to join. You can sign up and you can visit Tatsimo Voices group, and Deborah Lee, who runs it, will let you in. We have different shows almost every night of the week. You can add to the topic board. You can follow along to the poems themselves as we read them, participate however you like. I always like to say thank you to Deborah Lee for running the group and the Blog Talk page so we can geek out live. A Team of Voices Blog Talk is sponsored by AP Taylor. Thank you very much. And tonight we are going down the tube. Do it once a month, a special show where we talk about some really random stuff. We go in many different directions on this show. I did pick out three topics that I will get to, and we will be spotlighting. And just a little bit about our opening music. Our opening music, since it is spooky season, I picked a Pan's Labyrinth done by Arutan, and I just love that. Love that song. A little bit about Arutan, in her own words. My mother was a private classical violin teacher and taught lessons in our home. There was never a moment where I wasn't listening to music and her students or vinyl records of classical, ancient medieval worlds, and many other types of music on our old turntable. I was presented with and started playing my first violin at age 1.5. It was a 1/32 size, which is the smallest practical size of violin available. I broke it within a day, but that was to be expected. What was not expected was my taking to the instrument for real and learning very fast. I mimicked my mother's students and learned the pieces that they played while still in diapers. We have a few precious videos of this, which I have to bring out one day to share. And when I was 15, I started playing Celtic and medieval music with a small group called Donnybrook Legacy Sonus. I joined them when they were winding down from a major label recording and were doing more laid-back local performances. I would definitely check her out. I really love all her music. And she does really cool cosplay videos, which I always enjoy. And that was from Pan's Labyrinth. And for years, my best friend was telling me that I need to watch the film Pan's Labyrinth. And I finally got around to it last year, in October. I read the book first, and then I watched the movie, which had English subtitles, and I still loved it. I love when I watch a movie with subtitles, and then I talk about it, and I forget that there were subtitles, and someone says to me, those were all in subtitles. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. And that's one of those films that it was just so good that I sometimes forget, but there are subtitles, but it's worth it. And I remember just thinking and saying to myself, I love this book. I need to read it every October, or listen to it on Audible to be exact. So it is at that time, and I'm halfway through the month, so I better get on that. But yep, I thought it was a great song for the opening. And without further ado, I do have already a caller on the line, my unofficial right hand, right? Hi, Rex.
Hey.
Do you like being unofficial, my unofficial official?
Yeah, no, that's
how
awesome. I feel like I'm in a slingshot.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right, you know. But the weather's changing, and I prefer the heat to the cold, but I can deal with it, so I'm good.
Well, this is my favorite type of weather. Like, before it gets below zero, but it's sweater weather. Like, I can walk out in my fall jacket, which I have three of them, or I can just walk out in a sweater and a scarf. I just really, really love this weather. It's, like, perfect weather for me. But there was this meme that I saw, and it said, this is the time of year New Englanders see how tough they are. to see who turns on the heat first. And I have to say, last night was the first day that I turned on the heat. I was like, forget this. So, and I did put it on. Did. But what did you think? That music was so, it's so beautiful and haunting at the same time. That's what I really loved about it. It was just beautifully haunting. I don't know how else to describe it. But
One of my friends when I grew up had, he was always into like the harmonica, and he would play the pan flute. So I got to see, you know, someone live, like within 2 feet of me playing the things like that all the while growing up. So I'm a little spoiled when it comes to it. But yeah, I like that because it definitely sets a tone, a mood. It can be very, very haunting and hypnotic.
Yeah, I agree. That's another hauntingly hypnotic. I have this person who works at my part-time job, and he plays just about any instrument you can think of, and he plays the tin whistle. And when he plays the tin whistle, it is just so amazing. I mean, he pulls instruments out of his pockets. He has finger pianos that are small, big. He plays with like these spoons that you clack together. He's like a walking weird band. But he does. He always has his tin whistle on, and I just love listening to him.
It's funny. I had a science teacher that used to pull an ocarina out of his pocket. I wouldn't know what it was if it wasn't for this guy. So yeah, I can appreciate the tin whistle. Yeah.
Didn't you play Zelda?
Oh, nice.
Or you said you wouldn't know what an ocarina was if it wasn't for this guy. But didn't you play Zelda Ocarina of Time? Oh, wow.
I knew what it was from my friend before that, yeah.
Oh, before that, yeah. Okay, well, you know what? I am doing because I know you know Zelda because we talked about it before. I didn't know what Ocarina was until Zelda. But I was young when Zelda – I wasn't young when Zelda came out, but I was – well, yeah, I was young.
You're still young.
Yeah, I was – when Ocarina of Time came out, I was in, I don't know how old I was, actually. I was young. I played it in
school. It would be appropriate if you were
It's still my favorite one. It's still, yes. But for December, I was thinking about what I want to do for storyboards in December, and I thought, you know, I've done a lot of Christmas movies in the past. Like, I've done so many Christmas films. I've done all the Home Alone, all the Santa Claus, my favorite Santa Claus 1980s version that is still my favorite. You know, I've done all these different types of Halloween films, and I mean not Halloween, Christmas. And then I know we're pushing Halloween right out of the way, right? But I thought, you know what, I'm going to do something different. So here's a little sneak peek into December. I know we're still in October, and I'm like Walmart right now, pushing it out of the way, and I already put a Christmas up there. But we were on the topic of Zelda, and I am doing a Zelda Christmas-type special because Zelda came out with this CD of music, of Christmas music, but like Hyrule Christmas music. And it's really cool, and I'm going to put some pictures up there. It's going to be really exciting. So if you're a Zelda fan, hang on, because in December it is coming. And I have been waiting to bring Zelda to storyboards for a long time. But just like Star Wars, I want to do it right. And so that means that it's going to be a type of series when I do bring it, which is – and just if I'm not ready to do it full stop, then I don't do it. Just like that's why we're 37 episodes into Star Wars. Oh, well, we're not 37 yet, but we will be by the end, which is coming soon. Anyway, let's get down into the tubes, right? So I had some topics, and I thought they were pretty cool, and they were spooky. And we are going to have some clips, and two of them are brought to you by PBS, Public Service Announcements, And one of them I broke up from this really cool broadcast that used to go on. I just absolutely love it. And it's a story by Ray Bradbury, whom I love and have not brought to any of my shows actually yet. So I'm excited about that. I can't find my topic board. Here we go. But the first clip we are going to play, we're going to play The Little Apples of Death. And I really thought that this was a public service announcement in itself because these trees truly do exist. And I'm going to play the clip, Rack, and you can listen to it. And we could chat a little bit about it after. And they're really cool. And I thought, what's better for spooky season than poison apples, right? So
they look like crab apples.
I know. So, you know, I think it's important that people know what's around them so they don't die. So you'll thank me someday. But here we go. Here we go.
If you're ever vacationing in the Flamingo section of Everglades National Park in Florida, beware of the apples. In fact, if you're pretty much anywhere from northern South America to Florida, including the Caribbean and Galapagos Islands, and you see a tall tree growing near water with yellowish, greenish, crab apple-looking fruit, it's probably best to keep your distance. The fruit might be delicious, but it could also be deadly. Because that tree might be a manchineel, which, according to the folks at Guinness World Records, is the world's most dangerous tree. Every part of the manchineel is toxic. The sap in its wood and leaves can cause blindness and blistering. Its fruit can cause boils in the mouth and throat, as well as severe intestinal damage that can kill you. It's no wonder Spaniards gave it the nickname La Manzanilla de la Muerte, or Little Apple of Death. The tree contains a number of toxins, but the worst is probably forbol. Or should I say forbols? Forbol refers to a family of related organic molecules that have two terpene chemical groups, and they're similar to compounds you have in your body, which is a bit of a problem. See, forbols mimic the action of diacylglycerol, a fatty molecule your body uses in a number of ways, including to activate an enzyme called protein kinase C, or PKC for short. PKC is a pretty big deal because it regulates things like cell growth and metabolic activity. So when forbols overactivate PKC, cells will increase their expression of genes involved in inflammation and cell death. This leads to a range of nasty effects like blistering and ulcering. Manchineels have forbols everywhere, which is why you shouldn't touch any part of them. Oh, and here's a not-so-fun fact. Forbols are very soluble in water, so it's not a good idea to stand under a manchineel when it's raining either, which, you know, it does in places like the Everglades. A lot. What's not entirely clear is why this tree went so overkill on the toxicity. It may be that since the manchineel typically grows in areas where there are lots of other toxic plants, it has such overdeveloped defense mechanisms to stay competitive. And it can get away with having toxic fruit because it doesn't need animals to spread its seeds. It lives by the ocean, so its fruit can bob along on the waves to move to new land, though it may get more love from critters than you'd think. Some reptiles seem to eat the fruit with no ill effects, and black spiny-tailed iguanas will even live in the trees. How remains a mystery. And even our species doesn't always keep away. Because the trees live in places like Florida, where there are lots of strong winds, and, you know, hurricanes every so often, their wood is really hard. So cabinet makers love it, though they have to carefully cut and dry the planks for several days to let the forbol-laced sap evaporate out. And the trees aren't just hard. Their deep roots and thick branches help protect coastlines from damaging winds and waves. That means, while they might be toxic to touch, they help protect us and coastal ecosystems during storms. So if you...
That's the end of that public service announcement. I think it cut off a little quickly. But yeah, so... What I find interesting is you can't even when it's carried by the rain, it's still toxic. Yeah. So, and you kind of have to know. I feel like when you go to those areas, you should look at what the trees look like. But you know what's funny is that, you know, people see poison oak. A lot of people can't identify poison ivy or poison oak, but we still run around the woods. But I feel like that's a little bit different than running around the woods with toxic trees. I feel like you should maybe look up what they look like and stay away from them. What I also found interesting was that we still use it. We still use it for sources of wood, for furniture, and Yeah. So, and they didn't mention it in the video, but they also, so to avoid contact with poisonous parts, the trees burnt at the base to fell it. You know, so they just, but like, if you burn it, yeah, I guess it doesn't go into the air molecules, just in the rain. So I don't know. I would just stay away. I would just stay away. In the picture, they show a lot of the trees, like in the woods. They show, like, the sign. They're marked. I wonder if they're like that. Like, I mean, they can't mark every tree, right? I mean.
Oh, that would be a huge undertaking. It wouldn't be easy. And then you get these people that are like, well, it wasn't marked. So, and so you get a lot of lawsuits. So, yeah.
There wasn't a message on my hot coffee that said it was hot and could burn me.
Oh, please.
You just reminded me.
Don't use your hair dryer in the bathtub either.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a bunch of warning symbols.
Oh, I don't know if Sweet had a bad time with the hairdryer. I don't know if she really wants me.
But she wasn't in the bathtub when that happened. So.
No, it was just a malfunction. So you just stay away from them all together. Yeah, crazy. So yeah, there's a lot of sciencey stuff, and I'm not like, I would not say science is the top of my random facts. I'm pretty okay with the science of everything. You know, I'm not too, like, I'm not very savvy on, but the main thing to take away from that is that it's poison. To stay away from it, that's the important part.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, that there's varying degrees of things like that. It's like everything is severely toxic in this particular tree, but peaches, I believe, are the source of, is it cyanide? Or cyanide is the one that smells like the burnt. But if you take a peach pit and you actually break the pit open, and that little seed inside can be processed into a poison, that's where one of the poisons comes from. Holly berries from just, you know, regular, the Christmas plants are poisonous. It's all around us. What's the other one? And there's things that are in like the poison family. I want to say, what is it? The orchids have a type of poison related to them. It's all over the place if you just kind of, you know, dig around a little bit. And like you're saying, you know, science is amazing, and there's the varying degrees of it. That you know, basically things like, you know, the rain or whatever makes it soluble or enhances it or carries it. So you know, you got to be careful about everything. I don't know the percentage, but most mushrooms are poisonous. So, you know, again, you're talking about, you know, being in the woods and whatnot. It's like, oh, look, I found a mushroom. Well, don't eat it, because chances are it's not good for you. But, you know, there's ways of identifying them and everything. And then, you know, there's some of them that are so prized. You know, people pay, you know, $80 a pound for them and crazy things like that. You know, or I shouldn't say a pound, $80 an ounce, I think it is. Truffles are insanely expensive. You know, so that comes to mind. And you know, I mean, yeah, no. And then there's the practice of sushi. They eat fugu, which is the blowfish. Every part of that fish is poisonous, including the part that you eat. You have to have a licensed sushi chef make the fugu, and even that they have to know which piece to give you that's not going to kill you. Because it's the least poisonous. So part of the experience of eating fugu is the numbness that comes along with eating it. And you're literally taking a percentage of poison and poisoning yourself when you eat fugu.
So leave it to the food guy, right? I was when you were talking, I was waiting, and when you started talking about that stuff, I was going to bring up the blowfish, because I was like, why are people doing this? But you covered that, and you actually know more about it. I don't know what the technical term was, but I just know that people are just eating blowfish, even though it can poison it. Yeah, I don't want to. And I just did a little of typing while you were talking just at the very beginning. And the thing that you were talking about was peach pits do contain cyanide, but it's in a form known as amygdalin and can be broken down by the enzymes in the intestines to produce cyanide. So that's really interesting. I didn't know that. How do you even know that? Just curious.
Too much random facts. Too many hours down the tubes.
too much random. I don't know if I know a lot of random facts about food. I don't think I know. You're like the guy to go to when it comes to food.
It's funny because it relates to the poison. So if you're going to eat food, it's helpful to know what you can eat. You know, things like that. What causes certain reactions and. The one that I find very interesting, which isn't poisonous at all, is the Sichuan peppercorns. They're not peppercorns at all, and they cause a numbing effect when you eat them in your mouth. So that's similar to the fugu without the poison.
So it's not just peaches. It's cherries, apricots, plums, and peaches.
And what is it? The nightshade family. Nightshade is poisonous, but you can eat a tomato, which is in the nightshade family.
I'm looking at you. Made me curious now, and we're going down the tube, obviously, because now I'm looking at foods that can be deadly, and I'm looking at rhubarb, oxalic acid. Oh, so.
You could have your rhubarb pie.
Yeah, well, this woman ate 10 pounds of rhubarb, and she was 130 pounds. So that's probably, don't do that. More cyanide. I do know that, yeah. Apples and pears, more cyanide. Wow. All right, yeah, I do know about water poisoning. I mean, you have to drink a lot of water to do that.
Like, yes, but it is possible.
And you drown your lungs. Yeah, like you have to be really doing something wrong with your life if you're like, I don't know. You have to really be doing something there. So I have, what do I have? What poem do I have? Let me go back down to my poems. I have, let's see.
Ray Bradbury.
I do have that, but I usually like to play a clip and then a poem and then a clip and then a poem. So I'm actually, this wasn't really isn't technically to the apple one, but it is definitely in the spooky season, which I so appreciate because really that's what I said. I said, give me something spooky, even if spooky. And LG Mace did. So I want to get hers up there. And then we'll play my first clip. Yeah, so I'm going to smush Ray. So we have the apples, and then I'm going to do two clips that are longer from the story. And then I'm going to close with do the puka last. So I'm going to do the apples and then Ray and then the puka last because that's just how I have it planned out. But this is my first poem. It's the only poem right now. I'm sure somebody's going to come by. And it's okay. We could just chat and talk about things. That's absolutely fine. All right. So... Oh, I might have to take a drink before this one. Rack, tell us about your show at the end of the month.
Oh, it's going to be a monster bash. Bring any of your favorite, monsters, madmen, mad scientists, fantasy. It's just Halloweenish type things, urban legends. It's very, very flexible, very open. It is the season for horror, so make me scream.
Awesome. Can't wait for that monster bash. I do have some announcements, but I'm going to wait. Thank you for giving me a moment so I can drink some water. All right, here we go. My Very Worst Nightmare by LG Mace. My very worst nightmare, personified, is more than just creepy or weird. Beyond hot weird, imagination and my screwed psyche is seared. This living horror has no words for a mere mortal decryption. Those blood-red eyes that sear into my very soul, those bizarre, Stephen King-ish, clownish, ghouly expressions devour me whole, leaving only my crunched bones and shredded body left in a rotten, bloody, putrid heap, running from the shadows of crypt-like dreams. Hear the eerie banshee calls and ghostly screams. Yes, just thinking of my very worst nightmares and his atrocious activities keep me trembling in my bed, miles from sleep. End poem. That was a great poem. I have to say, I love the shout out, Stephen King-ish. I love it. clownish ghoul, ghouly expressions. What is that? Clownish ghouly expressions devour me whole. I don't like clowns, and I blame it on scary films. So, LG, I'm right here with you, and believe it or not, it wasn't Stephen King that made me hate clowns. It was a film, and I probably talked about it before, but Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and I know it's supposed to be funny, but I did not think it was funny when I was, like, 4 and watching it, and I'm not sure why the babysitter. It's always the babysitter, right? I don't know why the babysitter let me watch this so young, but I had to be in kindergarten. I don't even know how. I had to be like 5, I think. I was very young, and it's weird because I don't have a lot of memories from that young. But I'll tell you, I remember watching this film, and I didn't see it for years and years and years. And all I could remember about the whole film, the only thing I could remember, was the clown going into like this cooler area and sucking the blood out of a sack that was a human. And I hated clowns after that. I made my mother get rid of all these porcelain clown heads she had on my bureau. I wanted them. She put them in another room, and I screamed, and she had to get them out of the house. It was awful. And in my mid-20s, I said, you know what? I'm going to watch this film again. It terrorized me. I haven't seen it since I was young. Everybody always laughs at me when I say it scared me because it's supposed to be a comedy. So I watched it, and I watched it from a different perspective, but I still didn't like it. I was like, I don't like this. This is too scary. So I really particularly loved that section of it. I also loved the rhythm of the poem. It had this long, you know, when you read the poem, the lines are a little uneven, like they just flow, like they're long line rhymes, but the long line kind of catches to the next line, and it works out really, really well, because when I was reading it, I knew exactly where to land the rhyme, and and I loved that because it's kind of tricky, like it looks like it's tricky because of the way that it's kind of put together, but it really works out really well that way. I just really, and it helps the fast pace. And I don't know if she wanted it read like that, but when the lines are all together like that, I figure there's not as many pauses, right? Because the lines are together. So I hope I read it right, and it was really fun to read. I really did enjoy the catch rhymes. And I liked it was a little bit of dark humor, you know, beyond the hot, weird imagination, my screwed psyche is scared. Like, that really made me smile, too. Like, there's so many parts of this that I really, really enjoyed. Also, the, this leaving, and then it was kind of funny, but then you got into this, like, leaving only my crunched bones and shredded body left in a rotten, bloody, putrid heap. And then I got, like, really dark section. And I was like, oh. Yeah, and I thought that was really cool. And I agree. You know, I used to watch a lot of scary films when I was younger, and I really liked horror. And I feel like as I'm getting older, I don't like as much horror. Like, I don't watch it a lot. And I don't like to watch it alone. And like I was saying the other day, I watched The Haunting of Hill House, and I binge-watched it into the night. And then by the time I was, it was dark, and I was like, why am I doing this? I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to have nightmares. I'm not going to want to sleep. I'm going to be making sure my toes are underneath the blankets the whole night. this is really, really fun. I really, really liked this one. And the Atrocious Activities I thought was cool to put together. Rack, I swear I'm going to give you a turn to comment. What do you think?
I really enjoy this because when you get down to the root of it, it's all about the triggers, you know, and that gives this a universal appeal because she's not just talking about something specific, even though it's specific to her. She's pulling the camera back enough that you can relate to it, because when you get down to the crunching bones and whatnot, it doesn't have to be a clown that's doing it, so you can relate to it regardless of how it's happening. So she's bringing you there through what's scaring her, but at the same time she's sharing the end result. So she's giving it that broader appeal. Even something that she did that I really appreciated, that it was kind of subtle, but at least to me it felt subtle, but I thought it was done beautifully. When she mentions the banshees, because that in itself has its own legends about the whispering and the noises and the things that go bump in the night. So just the mention of the banshee screams is enough to be like, you know, I want to pull the covers over my shoulders and hide my neck, you know, that kind of thing. There's something there. If they can't see me, I'm invisible, you know. That thought comes to mind. And all the things that wrap around the, you know, my hand can't touch the floor because something under the bed will grab my hand. Or, you know, all those things come to mind, even though she doesn't specifically mention them. She kind of incorporates it into the same genre, the same fear, when she starts talking about the triggers of the blood red eyes and the bones that are left, you know, afterwards. So I really love the way that she handled it. Beautifully done.
Yeah, I was partial to the bones too. Oh my gosh, and I love it. And it was definitely nightmarish and spooky and haunting and yeah, really awesome. Thank you so much, LG. I really appreciate it. That was so cool.
I have an evil clown poem if you want it.
Yeah, bring it. Do it. Tell me what the name is, and I'll look. Because I'm gonna.
It has children's television in the title.
Children's television. All right, so I'll look that up. I'm gonna play. I don't know if Deborah's. She dropped. I'm not sure if she's. I don't want to play my next clip if she wants to call right now. So let me see. What she's doing, because I don't want to play my next clip if she has to read and run. So let me just see what she's doing. In the meantime, while she's going to answer me, I would like to talk about my next show, and that is actually tomorrow, because I'm a crazy person. Actually, I was talking to Deb about it. She was like, well, I really wasn't talking, but I was messaging, and she's like, you're a host queen. And I was like, well, and then I thought about it, and I was like, well, really, I'm not doing any more shows than I was doing, because I was still doing four over at Poetic every week, and then I was doing one here, right? So, really, I'm not doing any more than what I did. It just seems that way because it's all on one show. But I did pick up one extra show, and that was the Shutter button, and I don't do anything with that. I just, those are already written, and most of them I've already commented on. So, no work, right, except being on here, which is fun. So, all right. She is calling, so I do not want to play my next clip. I'm going to wait for her, which is perfect because she wrote about the apples, and we're on the apples. So perfect timing. So tomorrow I am on, as I was saying, and we are doing, The Haunting of Bly Manor. Oh, I just love it. So we did The Haunting of Hill House last week, and this was like an anthology series. And then tomorrow we're doing The Haunting of Bly Manor, and this is one of my favorite shows. one of my favorite haunting shows. I just really love both of them, actually. The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor, I just think they did really great. And again, The Haunting of Bly Manor was based off of a book, The Turn of the Screw, which I did read, and I do like the series better. The book was a very short story, and they really changed it a lot. But I'm really not going to complain. And I don't say that often. I did say it last week, but and I didn't complain only because The Haunting of Hill House has so many versions, and they already did it right, and I've already seen the book done right, and they did take liberties. But this one, I just love the series. It makes me kind of sad, though. But all right, so Deborah Lee is here. Hi, Deb.
Hello.
Hi, Scott.
Hi,
Rockin'.
How are you?
I'm okay, a little frazzled, and I wrote a bit of a dark comedy in my right.
We like dark comedies here. All right, let me just finish up just really quick. I'm just plugging the one. So tomorrow to 8, The Haunting of Bly Manor. Bring me a spooky poem. Bring me any haunting spooky poem you want, because I'm going to bring a fandom. And I'm so excited for tomorrow. It's really one of my favorite series. I can't say enough. All right, Deb, apples. We are on apples, so you have a perfect timing, actually.
Ah, I like when that happens. And I think my suite might even have liked this one. But so my preface here is, you know how there's some people that no matter how nice you try to be, they like to poke and pick and make you feel better by making you feel worse, and they you say something and they twist your words and they run to somebody, and they're those backstabbers, and you decide the best way to deal with them is to kill them with kindness, and that's what the poem's about. And this is called Apple Pie to Die For, when you want to kill them with kindness. And it's a recipe. So grab gloves to cover skin and wear in preparation of the ingredients. The recipe: 2 pre-made pie crusts, 5 red and 5 Granny Smith apples, peeled, cored, and sliced, 10 manchineal apples found in sea coasts and in brackish swamps of mangroves. Smash in a plastic bag to release the milky white sap. 1.5 teaspoons of cinnamon, 8 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 3 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, 1/4 cup of water, 1 cup of granulated sugar, an egg, and a teaspoon of water for egg wash, and a spray can of whipped cream. In a big glass mixing bowl, combine the apples and sprinkle with the 1.5 teaspoons of sugar and toss to combine. Melt butter in a saucepan over medium heat. Whisk in 3 tablespoons of flour and then simmer for 1 minute. Blend in 1/4 cup of water and 1 cup of sugar, and then bring to a boil. Reduce heat. Then, simmering 3 minutes, whisk as it cooks and remove from heat. Squeeze in the white mashed mac and chills, then pour the sauce over the apples and stir to coat the apple slices. Spread a pie crust sheet in a 9-inch pie plate sprayed with cooking spray. Add apple mixture mounding in the center. Keep the filling off the edges so that it'll seal to the top crust. Pinch on the edges, then poke the top crust with a fork to vent. Beat together 1 egg and 1 teaspoon of water, and then brush the top with the egg mixture. Bake at 425 Fahrenheit in the center of the oven for 15 minutes, then at 350 for another 45 minutes until the apples are soft and the filling is bubbling. Cool at room temperature an hour before serving. Slice the pie and drop a dollop of whipped cream on top and serve to the victim. The fruit juice and the cream hits the taste buds and they swallow. 2 bites, 3, then blisters bubble on the lips and chin. They coat the esophagus too as they bite slides down the throat, eating the stomach lining as it poisons the eater. whisper the reason you baked them the pie. Grinning, the backstabber dies. Clean up the traces and drive home and sleep like a baby. And home.
So, our resident cook is dying, but Rack, I love you, man, but I don't love you enough to give you the first comment, so you're going to have to be patient. Oh, my gosh. My eyebrows, I hear him. I hear him just, oh, my God, I love the details. I just hear him in my head because he just loves cooking. By the time you got to the slice, the pie, the dollop of whipped cream, and serve it to the victim, my eyebrows were up by my hairline, and I have a high forehead. Like, the whole bottom section, my eyes were just wide, and I'm getting kind of loud because I'm getting excited, and my eyebrows were, like, just up the entire bottom half because I'm just like, oh, she's bringing it. This is so fun. So I've read a lot of the Down the Tube poems from you, and you have done so many different creative things. You have not done something like this, which I just love, because you took the topic, and you made a recipe, which is really cool. And despite the fact that it was all poisonous, I was getting kind of hungry, which happens a lot. I always say that to you. You always somehow make me hungry in your poems, even when they're not supposed to be hungry poems. You just talk about food, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't even like apple pie. I don't really like apples in any of my food, really. I mean, I like apples, but I really do not like. My friend puts apples in all these things, and I'm like, please. I'm like, it's really good, but I don't prefer it. I don't know, but you just made me want to have it. So it must have been the cinnamon and all that detail. So it was really cool. I love your take on it, you know, killing them with kindness, because you're like, oh, here's my apple pie. And there's like this sinister motive behind it. And where was it? Oh my gosh. Where was it? The part where you got to the blistering lips and the blister bubble on the lips and the chin coat, the esophagus. Two, as they fight slide down the throat, I was having a little hard time swallowing. I'm like, oh, my God, she's getting real. And then the grinning as the and this is, too, okay, I change my mind. This is my favorite part, hands down, because it reminds me of Game of Thrones. And I know you've never seen the series, but there's this part, this epic part, and who was it? Oh, I love her. I'm not going to remember. I'm not going to take her time with it. But there was someone poisoned the king, and it was someone's grandmother, and I forget her name. And I loved her. She was like one of my favorite characters. But right, so she poisoned the boy king. He was evil. Don't worry. He was an evil little boy. And then, like, right when she, you know, his dad, who didn't know that she killed him, he was going to sentence her to death, and he was going to give her the easy way, and she takes the poison. He puts the poison in front of her, and then she takes the poison. And then right before she dies, and he, like, you know, his wife wanted to, not his wife, but, you know, the mother wanted to kill her the long way, and he gave her the easy way out, and she looks at him and says, it was, tell Cersei it was me. I want her to know I'm the one who did it. Like, right before, and it just reminded me of that most, like, this most epic part of this person just gasping and dying, and all these blisters on this lips, and all this stuff happening, and the speaker's just sitting there like, you know what you did to deserve this? Well, I'm going to tell you in your last few minutes. So that was my favorite part, was that end section, that little added, like, spark in the eye, like, yeah, I did that, but I'm going to tell you why. That cockiness, evil cockiness. Really, really well done. This is fun. Thank you.
I'm glad you liked it. And on a side note, if you take out the ingredients that have to do with the poison apples, it's a real pie recipe, and the instructions are real, and you could have a very juicy, tasty pie when you're done that wouldn't kill somebody. Just saying.
Okay. I really am not a fan of, I just don't like apple pie. I never have. I'm not really sure about apple turnovers, apples in anything, really. I'm not really into that. But it does sound tasty. And I love how you put the manchineal apples. Like, this is what's going to do it. Rack, you've been so patient, and I know you've just been dying over there. What do you think?
I've been stacking on the apples. I recognize the recipe from the beginning, Debs. It sounded really tasty, and I really appreciated the fact that you remembered to put on the gloves to handle them beforehand, because every part of it was poisonous, and I'm sitting there going, okay, she better do something so that she can handle the damn apples to begin with. But the thing that I really enjoyed about it is you know, the minute you mentioned poison apples, I want to say almost anyone that grew up with Disney, you know, thinks of Snow White and, you know, the poison apples and, you know, giving her the apples. So why not bake it into a pie? That's an easy way to give someone a poison apple. So it's kind of a natural extension of that. So I really appreciated that idea as well. Because it hints back at the one without, like, hitting you over the head with it. And, you know, it kind of needs to be, you know, pointed out, you know, because people put shit in pies that don't belong in there sometimes. Not necessarily that are going to kill you, but you know, it's just like, you know, it's been unfortunate, you know, sometimes somebody will serve you a pie or whatever, and you're enjoying it until you find, it's like, there's raisins in here. Why did you put raisins in here? Just something stupid that just doesn't agree with you personally. But this is like to the next level kind of thing. And you know, again, the killing you with kindness thought, you know, applies to that poisoning as well. You know, I don't know why you hung around to watch them eat it, but, you know, I guess that there's that gloating factor that you kind of, like, you know, want to tell them, and this is what you did to deserve that, you know, and all that works very well in this piece. Lovely, lovely.
Thank you, Rack. Yeah, and I was going to say, if you don't stick around to see them eat it, you don't get to tell them why they were served it, type of thing, you know. Yeah, no, it was really fun. That was a cool comment. And, you know, aside from the pie, I was shocked. I didn't realize that this was something native to Florida, and that in the history when I was reading, it said that in the earliest European records of the apples were written by Spanish doctor Diego Alvarez Chenca, who accompanied Christopher Columbus on his second voyage to the New World. And I'm like, wow. And they even say that it's possible that Juan Ponce de Leon died from an Indian arrow dipped in these apples. They are fascinating little creatures.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, they could be weaponized. Yeah, I didn't think of that. And, you know, and I also didn't click. It clicked with Rack, and then he said it, so it clicked with me. I didn't even realize that you said put the gloves on in the beginning, and that was so important because you would have poisoned yourself too. I didn't even think of that. I'd be the dope who just made them without the gloves and like, oh, yeah, that sucks. So I thought that was – I actually missed that part, so I'm glad Rack said something. But, yeah, to think about it being weaponized, yeah, I would imagine that did happen, but I didn't think of that either. That's pretty cool.
Just desserts.
Just desserts, absolutely. Very cool.
Oh,
all right, guys, I got to beat feet. I appreciate you both, and I'll see you tomorrow at your show, Sky.
Thank you.
Sky, Sky. Love and respect.
Thank
you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, before I play, that was pretty cool. Before I play my clip, I am going to just, maybe I should put these in order. I was going to plug our show, but now I'm not sure. Okay, so my show is tomorrow, and here we go. Sweep the X, where I'm going. Somebody has all their shows up in November, and it's clogging up all the board. I'm not going to say who that is. Might be Sky. let's see. Sweet discussions on the 19th on Thursday at 10 p.m. Bring me your legend. Tonight's discussion, bring me your legend. Of course, there are the standard stories we all love. The Headless Horseman, Bigfoot, Wolfman, vampires, banshees. Oh, I have one for this. and the many urban legends out of the world, or tell us of your own hauntings. Have fun, let your muse guide you, and come on and discuss your favorite legend with Sweet Pea on Sweet Discussions. I actually, yes, it could be. You could have double dipped. You could have definitely double dipped. But I actually have a poem that I don't read too much. I don't even think I think I deleted it somewhere, but I can undelete it. It's okay. Don't panic. But I have something. I have something. And then on Friday, Liquid Damage Linda is doing open poetry at 10. And then on Saturday, AP Taylor and Deborah Lee and Hatter are doing Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, Wherever It Takes You. Yeah, that's really cool. And that starts at 9 on Saturday. And then this is not a week for Jay, because last week was Jay for his serial killer pop thing. And then the next one, the next show is Monday. It's Monday.
Deborah Lee.
And that is Deborah Lee's Picture Prompt Monday. Let me see what date that is. It is the 23rd. It'll be easier to find here. So Deborah Lee does the picture. Oh, she's right at the top. Thank you, Deb. She must have just edited. Okay, so it is Personal Prompt Monday, Dark Stephen Mackey Art, and it goes live at 10, and there's some really cool art choices. I'm just looking at them now, and yeah, they're good. I wanted to go last night, but I didn't finish my poem. My goddaughter was over here. We fell asleep at 8:30 watching Labyrinth with David Bowie. I think I fell asleep, but you remind me of the babe. Maybe even before that, actually. Yeah, so this is pretty cool. Pick a prompt. Each person gets their own prompt, and you can reserve it. And she always has a word bank. Word bank's optional. One poem per poet, and go reserve your personal prompts. They're really cool artwork. And, yeah, that's about it. And then, since I might as well go to next week, right? Since we're on Tuesday, I might as well go to next Tuesday. So next Tuesday, I'm going to be back on for Shutter Button Poetry. All you have to do is go to one of my many Oktoberfest contests. I've been doing Oktoberfest now for at least 3 years, and there's a link. You could write a new poem. You could see if you wrote for one of them. They're all October-themed. So you have to pick one from one of those contests, not just one of my 640, but one of the Oktoberfests. And we're just going to be doing shutter button poetry, and there's no rules, just right to the pitcher. No homework required, right? Sweet Pea will be in heaven. She'll be like, oh, wow, no homework. So that's it. All right, so without further ado, I know you've been waiting. Racks, like, I've been waiting all night for this. Here's Ray Bradbury. This was the second prompt. It was The Wind. I really love this story. I just love this story. This story is broken up into two parts for two sections recorded. So I'm going to play the first recording. I was hoping to get a poem in there. Oh, I will, because I'll bring the clown poem. We'll do the first recording, and I will find your clown poem. What was it called again, Rack? The Children was in it?
It's got Children's Television in it, so I don't remember
the Children's Television
title. But yeah,
so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play that clip. It's a longer clip, and then we're going to do your poem, and then we'll go from there. So I hope you enjoy. I really think you're going to like this. And it was from a radio broadcast. They have them all on YouTube. It was a 13, Bradbury 13. And I just really love when they used to do radio theater, and this is what it is. So have fun. Thank you.
This is Ray Bradbury. Join me for the next 30 minutes on a tour through time and space. Go along to the far future. Follow me into a strange past with stories that almost could be or might have been. Real or unreal, this is Bradbury 13.
And his wife, you know. Haven't seen them in months.
I really wanted you to come over tonight.
Sorry.
When's your wife going away?
That's next week, Alan.
For how long?
She'll be in Ohio for about 9 days. Her mother's sick. I'll come over then.
I wish you could come over tonight.
I would if I could, but with company and all, my wife would kill me.
I know, but I wish you'd come over.
What is it? Alan?
Oh, nothing.
Is it the wind? Is it?
No,
it is the wind again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the wind.
Alan, it's a clear night. There's not much wind.
Well, there's enough. It comes in the window and blows the curtains a little bit. Just enough to tell
me...
Who
is it, honey?
It's Alan. Look, Alan, why don't you come and spend the night here? We've got plenty of room.
Oh, no, it's too late for that.
It's only 6:30. You could be here by 7.
No, it might catch me on the way over.
It's not that far.
With 30 miles, I wouldn't dare. But thanks. Besides, it's already getting dark.
Well, take a sleeping pill anyway.
Sure.
Herb, dinner's on.
Be right there. Ellen, dinner's waiting.
Right. Herb, I've been standing at the door for the past hour. I can see it building up from the west. There's some clouds there, and I saw one of them kind of rip apart at the top. There's a wind coming, all right.
Well, you just take a sleeping pill and call me anytime.
You mean it?
Of course I do. Later this evening, if you want. We'll be home all night.
All night?
Yes. Call me later.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, but I wish you'd come out. I wouldn't want you hurt or anything. You're my best friend, Herb, and I wouldn't want anything to happen to you on my account.
No.
After all, there's no telling what could happen if you tried to come out here. Maybe it's best I face this thing alone. I'm sorry to bother you.
What are friends for, Alan? I tell you what you do. Sit down and get some writing done this evening. How does that sound?
Sure.
You'll forget all about the Himalayas and the Valley of the Winds and this preoccupation with storms and hurricanes. Get another chapter done on your next travel book.
Yeah, I might do that. Maybe I will. I don't know. Maybe I will. Thanks a lot for letting me bother you.
No problem, Alan. Gotta go. My wife's calling me to dinner. Okay, pal?
Sure. Thanks, Herb.
Bye-bye.
Well, what did he want tonight?
Same thing, you know.
Him and his winds. He's got winds that blow up and winds that blow down and blow hot and blow cold.
Well, he did have quite a time in the Himalayas during the war.
You don't believe what he said about that valley, do you?
No. I don't know.
Herb.
Well, it makes a good story.
And that's all it is, a story.
Maybe.
Climbing around. Climbing things. Why do men climb mountains and scare themselves? Oh, eat your dinner.
It was snowing.
Was it?
And raining. And hailing and blowing all at once in that valley. Alan's told me a dozen times. He tells it well.
He should.
Well, he was up pretty high. Clouds and all. The valley made it. A noise.
I bet it did.
Like a lot of winds instead of just one. Winds from all over the world. At least that's what he says.
He shouldn't have gone there in the first place. You go poking around, and first thing you know, you get funny ideas. Like winds getting angry at you for intruding and following you home.
Don't make fun of him. He's my best friend.
It's all so silly.
Dr. Allen,
well,
he's been through a lot, you know. That big storm in Bombay, and then that typhoon off New Guinea 2 months later, and that time in Cornwall.
I have no sympathy for a man who continually runs into windstorms and hurricanes and then gets a persecution complex because of it.
I'll get it.
Don't answer it.
Well, maybe it's important.
It's only Allen again. Let it ring.
But I...
There. That wasn't so hard.
I hope it wasn't anything important. Like the office or the kids.
Your meat's getting cold. I don't believe it.
I can't let it ring.
Herb.
Hello.
Herb, it's Alan.
Oh, hello.
Herb, it's here. It got here.
You're too near the receiver. Back up a little.
Is it Alan again?
Herb, I stood at the open door and waited for it. I saw it coming down the highway, shaking all the trees one by one until it shook the tree just outside the house. And it dived down toward the door, and I slammed the door in its face.
How interesting.
Herb, what is it?
It's nothing. I'll be off the phone in a minute.
It's all around the house, Herb. In the back, in the front, all alongside by the bushes. I can't get out now. I can't do anything.
I see.
But I folded. I let it think it had me, and just as it came down to get me, I slammed the door and locked it. I've got a good, sturdy front door now. Put it up last Saturday. I was ready for it. I've been getting ready for weeks.
Have you now? Well, tell me about it.
It started about 6 weeks ago.
Oh, yes?
I thought I had it licked.
Did you?
I thought it had given up following and trying to get me, but it was just waiting.
Was it?
Yes, and then 6 weeks ago, I heard the wind laughing and whispering around the corners of my house out here. Just for an hour or so. Not very long, and not very loud. Then it went away.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it.
But it came back the next night. It slammed the shutters and kicked sparks out of the chimney.
I see.
It came back 5 nights in a row, a little stronger each time. When I opened the front door, it came in and tried to pull me out of the house, but it wasn't strong enough. Tonight, it is.
Glad to hear you're feeling better.
I'm not better. What's wrong with you? Is your wife listening to us?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I see. I know I sound like a fool.
Not at all. Go on.
Well, there's this...
Herb, I'm going back to the kitchen.
Fine, I'll be right there. Go ahead, Alan. You can talk now. My wife's out of the room. Get it out of your system. You'll sleep better.
Herb, it's all around the house now. Like a great big vacuum cleaner nuzzling at all the gables.
What was that?
It's knocking the trees around in the yard.
That's funny. I don't hear any wind outside.
Oh, of course not. It doesn't care about you, only about me.
Well, I guess that's one way to explain it.
It's a killer, Herb. The biggest, meanest, prehistoric killer that ever hunted prey. It's trying to smell me out, find me. When it finds me in the parlor, it drives its pressure there. And when I'm in the kitchen, it goes there. It's trying to get in the windows now. But I had them reinforced. I put new hinges on all the doors and new bolts. It's a strong house, all right. They built them strong in the old days.
Yes, they did.
I've got all the lights on now. All over the house. The house is lit bright as day. The wind followed me from room to room, looking through all the windows. When I switched on the lights...
Alan, what's going on?
It just snatched off the front screen door.
I wish you'd come over here and spend the night.
I can't. I can't leave the house. Not now. I can't do anything like that. I know this wind. Oh, it's big and it's clever, all right. I tried to light a match a moment ago, and a little draft sucked the flame out. It likes to play games. It likes to taunt me. It's taking its time with me. It's gone all night. Look at that.
What is it, Alan?
What? My old travel books on the library table. You won't believe this, Herb. A little breeze from some little hole in the house is blowing open the pages one by one. I wish you were here to see this. There's my introduction going by. Do you remember the introduction to my book on Tibet, Herb?
Yes.
Remember, it says, this book is dedicated to those who lost the game of elements, written by one who has seen, but who has always escaped.
Yes, I remember.
Herb, the lights just went out.
Alan?
The power lines just went down. Are you there, Herb?
I'm here. I hear you.
Figures, doesn't it? The wind doesn't like all that light in my house, so it tore the power lines down. The telephone will probably go next. Oh, it's a real party, me and the wind. Just a second. Hang on.
Alan. Alan.
What is it?
I don't know.
I'm back. There was a draft from the door, so I shoved some wadding under it to keep it from blowing on my feet. I'm glad you didn't come out after all, Herb. I wouldn't want you in this mess. There. It just broke one of the living room windows. And there's a regular gale in this house, knocking pictures off the wall. Do you hear it?
I hear it.
It wants me alive, Herb. It doesn't dare knock the house down at one fell blow. That'd kill me, and it wants me alive. So it could pull me apart finger by finger. It wants what's inside me. My mind. My brain. It wants intellect.
Herb, your supper's getting ruined.
My wife's calling me, Alan. I have to finish dinner.
It's a big cloud of vapors. Winds from all over the world. The same wind that ripped the Celebes a year ago. The same Pampero that killed in Argentina. The typhoon that fed on Hawaii. The same one that battered the coast of Africa early this year. It's part of all those storms I escaped from. Followed me from the Himalayas because it didn't want me to know what I know about the Valley of the Winds, where it gathers and plans its destruction. I know its feeding grounds. I know where it is born and where parts of it expire. And it hates me for that. The books I write tell how to defeat it. And it doesn't want me preaching anymore. It wants to incorporate me into its huge body to give it knowledge. It wants me on its side.
I have to hang up now, Alan. My wife...
What? What did you say?
Call me back in about an hour, Alan.
But I can't...
In an hour. Goodbye, Alan.
Goodbye, Alan. Oh... What do you think so far?
I love it. It's very relatable, you know, when you were a kid, at least, you know, even though they're adults still maintaining that, you know, what do you want? You know, that whole conversation reminded me of, you know, millions of conversations as a kid.
Yeah,
stop exaggerating. I wish you could be here. Come on over.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if it's real or not in the next clip. Stay tuned. All right. Your poem says adult content, but I read it. It's just because it's dark, so I think we're fine. It does say that in the title.
It's
probably just because it's about murder.
Very dark.
Yeah. All right. Children's television. You don't have an audio for this, so I'm going to read it. That's good? You put it under humor. Oh, Deb has it on our list too.
It is a little humorous.
Okay.
After all, there are clowns.
Yes, there are, yeah. I'm going to have nightmares. Thank you. Children's television is nothing to laugh at, by Raconteur. Bozo, always laughs, never frowns. Bozo, the clown. The pressure to succeed made Bozo snap. Mr. Green Jeans never heard a sound. Bozo slit his throat and laughed his trademark laugh as Mr. Green Jeans' blood soaked the ground. Bozo searched the studio, and before anyone discovered what was going down, the guy, that voice, that moose, the dancing bear, and that clock became the next victim of the murderous clown. Sabozo had forgotten. The captain once knew the tears of a clown. He was reminded after tripping over Fred Rogers' body that his wasn't the only lethal game in town. A hammer to the head from behind healed his fate, sending shards of skull into his brain. The captain got the drop on him, and just like that, Bozo was slain. I'd like to thank my sponsors right after feeding the hogs from Hee-Haw, the bodies all over the floor, and without the competition, my ratings are guaranteed to soar. And so, you and Deb are very sinister. She's like killing people for getting fat, for being mean, and you're like killing people to get your ratings up. I don't think I've ever actually watched Bozo the Clown. Like, I think there are some references that I don't quite get, which I'm sure you'll explain in a moment. But I thought this was so fun. And I know that you're a much slower reader than I am. When you read, you pace, but I couldn't help but, I don't know, I just read it how I felt it, so I hope it was okay. And I like the Mr. Green Jeans. I don't know, I just really liked that part. And I'm sure it's a character, and I'm not sure who it is because I've never watched Bozo. Because, like I said, I hated clowns, so I just avoided them. I had to push myself through American Horror Story season, whatever it was, the carnival season, the clown season. I had to, like, really push myself because I really liked it, but I was not okay with the clowns. I wouldn't say that I see a clown and I automatically, like no, but I do cringe. And I definitely wouldn't watch Bozo, but this is cool. I like the humor. It was humorous by the end. When I was pre-reading it, I didn't quite read it with, like, I just skimmed it, you know, and was like, are there any words in here? So I actually didn't hear the punchline or understand the punchline till I read it. So you are right. It was pretty funny because, like, by the end, like, I was just figuring it out through reading it. Even though I did kind of glance at it, I wouldn't say I thoroughly read it. So I was quite surprised when I was reading it out loud to see what happened. And I love how you brought in Mr. Rogers. Like, he was reminded after tripping over Fred Rogers' body that it wasn't the only lethal game in town. Bring that little bit of nostalgia in and saying, okay, well, how do we get our ratings up? And, you know, you always hear those horror stories about people in television and cutthroat business and, you know, who's going to get the first top notch on anything and some things that happen, especially in, like, what, the beauty pageants or whatever. So you always hear about these things. So the way that, huh?
Death to Smoochie.
You're going to have to elaborate on that.
It was a movie with Robin Williams where he was a TV clown. And there was
oh,
death and
yes.
destruction.
Wait, who? Who was the TV clown?
It was played by Robin Williams. Death to Smoochie.
Oh yeah, I didn't see that. I didn't see that film. I don't know if it was like my self preserving myself. Just like I didn't see the photo one, the one where he was like a stalker and he was keeping the photos of people.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that either. I think my brain was protecting itself against any bad image of Robin Williams right now. I know everybody said it was really good, but I just never watched it. And I love Robin Williams, but I never watched those two films.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he played them brilliantly. But maybe it was just a little bit of self-preservation, right, that I was just like, no, I don't want to watch that. But I'm sure he was brilliant, like he always is, you know. But, yeah, this is really fun, and I loved how you went with it. I loved the, I just love the whole idea of it. And I do like the end. I do like the humor that you bring into it because it brings all this, like, sinister mayhem and murder and, you know, plotting. But then at the end, you're like, yeah, my ratings are going to go up. Like, there's no there's no conscience here. And there's, I don't know, it's some kind of sick, dark humor makes me laugh at it. Really well done, Rack.
And in the author's notes, I mentioned before he became Captain Kangaroo, he was a clown on the other show, and I'm trying to remember which one it was. I kind of remember. I think I mentioned it in the author's notes.
Robert Keeshan, Captain Kangaroo, which I never saw either. Also the creator of Clarabelle the Clown on the Howdy
right.
Doody show. I know the Howdy Doody show, but I don't think I've ever seen that either. Brenham.
Yeah, that's just who the other characters were that I mentioned, the moose and the grandfather Flock.
Yeah.
But he was on the Howdy Doody show. He played the clown on the Howdy Doody show. So before he became Captain Kangaroo.
That's right. I didn't see those. I seen Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
What I seen. That's really cool, though. But the thing is that I didn't need to see those films to get the poem, which is really important, too. I think from a reader's perspective, to understand and follow along, I knew reading enough fandom poems, I knew there was stuff that I knew there was more to it than what I was getting from it. But you still get a lot from it. And I think it's only from my experience, knowing how much I put into my poems, my fandom poems, and I put all those little Easter eggs and how much work I put it, and a lot of people, like, they might miss it. And I'm like, but there's so much more to it. So I could get that only because I write fandom pieces like that. But, even with reading it, it's like there's nothing missing to it. But I personally knew that there's probably more to it than what I understood because of the fandom part.
Effectively, Bozo decided to increase his ratings. He had to get rid of the whole entire Captain Kangaroo show. So he was going through one at a time, working his way, looking for Captain Kangaroo, and he came across the other characters in the show, Mr. Green Jeans and whatnot. And then while he's looking for him, Captain Kangaroo's like, I'm having none of this. I used to be a clown, too. And he kills him.
Yeah, I did get it. And then there was Mr. I'd like to slide how you threw Mr. Now, how did Fred Rogers get in there?
He was just part of – he was on set, too, but you know, wrong place, wrong time.
Wrong place, wrong time. Oh, my goodness. Love it. I love it. I've read this one before. What did I say? I throw LOL, I'm with you, clowns are bad. Wonderfully worded. My one-line comment. I leave you a lot of one-line. I think I do on purpose so they don't have to read as much. Yeah, LOL, I'm with you, clowns are bad, wonderfully morbid. What was that? That was in 2020, so I think I'm sticking with that comment. I think I'm... you know what? I really... Oh, Deborah Lee swore. I'm just looking at these comments here. They're so funny. Oh, my gosh. I hear Joe Pesci asking the question. What am I, a clown? Oh, my gosh. That's you were responding to me. Okay. That was fun. And I actually found a poem to read that I'll read, but I'm going to play my next clip, and then I'll read my poem. But really, really well done. Thanks for bringing that one, and thanks for bringing it up. You and Deb are sinister creatures. Okay. Would you like to hear the conclusion to the story?
Yes, please.
Of course you do.
The wind.
What's a blackout tonight?
Nice. Not very chilly. Lots of stars. Why?
Nothing. Pass the bread, will you?
Oh, I can't believe it.
Oh,
full house. I just can't believe it.
You can believe it. Look for yourself.
Maybe you better quit while you're ahead, dear.
Absolutely not. Deal the cards, Liz.
Well, all right, but don't say you weren't warned.
Just deal them.
Anyone like some more sandwiches?
Not me. I'm stuffed.
How about you, dear? Herb?
Hmm?
Want a sandwich?
I don't think Herb's with us tonight.
Sorry, Stoddard. Just been thinking. Here we all are, and life sure is funny.
That's profound. How do you figure that?
Oh, I don't know, except here we are living our lives, and someplace else on Earth, 1 billion other people live their lives.
That's a rather obvious statement.
Stoddard, life can be a lonely thing, even with married people. Sometimes when you're in a person's arms, you feel 1 million miles away from them.
Well, I like that.
Well, I didn't mean it that way. I mean, we all believe what we believe and live our own little lives while other people live entirely different ones. I mean, we sit here in this room while 1,000 people are dying all over the world. Some of cancer, some of pneumonia, some having heart attacks. I bet someone's dying right this second of a car accident.
This isn't very stimulating conversation.
I mean, we all live and don't think about how other people think or live their lives or die. We wait until death comes to us. What I mean is here we sit on our self-assured rear ends while 30 miles away in a big old house completely surrounded by night and who knows what, one of the finest guys who ever lived is... Sorry. Is it my turn?
You dealt. It's my lead.
Right.
Oh, no.
I'll get it. Hello?
Herb, I've been calling and calling. What's it like at your house?
What do you mean, what's it like?
Has your company come?
Of course they come.
Are you talking, laughing, playing cards?
Yes, but what's that got to do?
Are you all cozy with the windows up and a fire crackling?
Well, I'm... What's
Sounds great, Herb. Sounds great. I wish I could be there. I wish I didn't know the things that I know. I wish a lot of things.
Alan, are you all right?
So far, so good. I'm locked in the kitchen now.
Why?
Well, simple, Herb. Part of the front wall of the house blew in about 10 minutes ago.
What?
Well, don't worry. I planned my retreat. The kitchen door gives. I'm heading for the cellar. If I'm lucky, I may hold out there until morning. It'll have to tear the whole damn house down to get me. And the cellar door is pretty solid. I have a shovel down there. I may dig deeper.
What's that?
That? Well, that's the voices of thousands killed in a typhoon. A hurricane, a cyclone. That's what the wind is. It's a lot of people. Dead people. The wind killed them. Took their minds to give itself intelligence. It took all their voices and made them into one voice. All those millions of people killed in the past 10,000 years, tortured and run from continent to continent on the backs and bellies of monsoons and whirlwinds. Oh, Herb, what a poem you could write about it. Hear it? Listen.
Your turn.
Alan?
That's how the wind gets more intelligent each year. It adds to itself, body by body, life by life.
We're waiting for you, Herb.
Look, I'm on the phone. Can't you see? I'm on the phone. Alan, if you want me to come out there now, I will. I should have come earlier.
No, thanks, Herb. Not now. This is a grudge fight. Wouldn't do to have you in it. I'd better hang up now. The kitchen door looks bad. I'll have to get in the cellar.
Call me back later?
Maybe, if I can. If I'm lucky. Frankly, I'm amazed it left the phone lines up so long. I've escaped so many times before, but I think it has me now. I think it does. I hope I haven't bothered you too much, Herb.
You haven't bothered anyone, Alan. Call me back in a few minutes. Okay?
I'll try.
About time.
Sorry.
How is he? Is he sober?
He's never taken a drink in his life.
I should have gone out there hours ago.
He's called every night for 6 weeks, and you've gone out there at least 10 nights to stay with him. And nothing was wrong.
He needs help. He might hurt himself.
You were just out there 2 nights ago. You can't always be running after him.
I know.
Herb, what's the problem? Alan needs professional help. The kind of help we can't give him.
I know that. Don't you think I know that? First thing in the morning, I'll have someone look at him.
Who?
I don't know.
Hey. My brother-in-law is a psychologist with the school district. I bet he could recommend somebody.
Sure, Jerry knows lots of people. He could help Alan.
I fought against this for months.
I know, but it's for his own good, Herb.
I know. You're right. If only he'd had an easier time of it. He was the only one to survive a blizzard in the Himalayas during the war. He almost froze to death hanging onto a rope. When they found him, they could hardly pry his fingers loose. He was in the hospital 6 months recovering from that.
Poor man. No wonder he needs help.
He wanted an old house surrounded by trees where the wind couldn't get at him.
There's nothing more you can do for him, Herb.
First thing in the morning, I'll take care of it.
We'd better be going.
Oh, so soon?
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for everything. Hope things work out for everyone.
I'll call you later, Liz.
Sure thing. Good night.
Night.
Later.
Drive careful.
Sorry. I know that's not the first evening Alan spoiled.
I'll clean up.
I think I'll see how he's doing. I just need to know. What?
Well, what is it?
Call didn't go through.
Try the operator.
Operator.
Operator, could you please try 555-0512?
All the lines are down in that district.
They're what?
When the lines are repaired, your call will go through.
But she hung up. The telephone lines are down.
They are?
I knew it.
Where are you going?
I'm getting my coat and going out there. I should have been there hours ago. I just knew it. The poor guy's probably scared out of his wits by now. And to think he asked my help and I refused him. Oh, some friend I am.
Sure, don't.
I've got to get out there. Don't you understand?
What's that?
I don't know. I'd know that laugh anywhere. It's Alan.
Alan?
Yes. Here, take my coat. He must have come over in his car after all. He couldn't wait until morning to tell me his confounded stories about the wind. Listen to that. He probably brought some friends with him. Sounds like a lot of other people. Alan, you old... Alan? Hey, none of your tricks now. Come on. Where are you, Alan? 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 Alan, where are you?
Died down, sad, mourning in the high trees, passing away, going back out to the sea, to the Celebes, to the Ivory Coast, to Sumatra and Cape Cod, to Cornwall and the Philippines, fading, fading, fading.
It's faded.
It's faded, and I'm on mute. I was just saying on mute that if you loved it like I do, the radio theater has not just Ray Bradbury, but they have other short stories, sci-fi, fiction, horror. Like, they have so many things. They did such a great job in the radio theater. They're, like, all on YouTube. You can just listen to them. Bradbury 13, obviously, is one of my favorites. There's, like, 13 stories. And the Here Be Tigers was one I really liked about Mars. It was really, really good. I mean, it was just really great. Great production and just really wonderfully done. And, yeah, so.
The Martian Chronicles? The Martian Chronicles?
The Martian Chronicles are.
You said about Mars.
Yeah, it wasn't the Martian Chronicles. I really wasn't a huge fan of the Martian Chronicles. I did read it. I know they have that on something, but they don't have that on the radio theater ones. But I really wasn't actually a huge fan of the Martian Chronicles. I kind of pushed through that. I've read most of his work. And that wasn't my favorite. It just was. I don't know what it was about it, but it just really wasn't my favorite. It wasn't that one. This one is like, I may bring it, and I might break it down in sections and may just feature it because it is really, really fun. And just, it's a lot of phone ringing. And, yeah, it's a cool story. He's like this guy, they go on Mars and the whole place is abandoned and everybody's dying and they built a whole civilization up there, but it's just the one guy. And he starts building these phones and he starts recording his voice, and then by the end he's haunting himself, but you're not really sure if it's himself or not. I don't want to break it just yet. So it's really fun. It's a fun one. But yeah, I just thought that was a cool one to bring tonight as part of. I don't usually do stories as part of my down the tubes. I may start introducing them, and so I think I shied away from it for a little bit because storyboards. I did stories, and I didn't want to really overlap too much. But now that storyboards is over at the Team of Voices, I might do some overlapping on stories for the Down the Tube. I may feature one story on Down the Tube. We'll see. But here, did you like it?
Awesome. Of course, you know, nice. Sophomore humor, when you say the wind, you know, you think of something else.
I didn't think of that. But, you know, to each his own. Well, I love the part where he goes, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but he's like, you could write a poem about it, or what a poem would it be? And I was just like, yeah, what a poem it would be. All right, so I picked this one. I just picked this one. I thought it would fit, so I'll read my poem, and then we'll move on to the last topic, which I think you're excited about because you were texting me about it.
Through it.
All right. Yeah. So this is called Into the Dark by Sky Darkholm. There are leaves in the cobwebs, tiny vines curling like yellowed nails, reaching. Paper bricks that sweat, edges folding in on themselves like button-down collared shirts, neatly folding, and coffins. Blue mechanic cuffs. Grease stains that lick with fire tongues and switchblade teeth, yellowing. And in the distance, the rat plays piano, chewing strings and spitting up bones, sewer wells that mirror lakeside views, dead bodies in water floating up from the dark, dark, dark. Hollow, like a turned-up top hat, flooding whispers, reach in, I found when you've lost, a jack-in-the-box missing springs and a smile, jack, Jack, who broke his back on the hills of those fading leaves, on the hill that caved in on itself, turned up grass and carnival wheels, weeds spinning, latching the heels of memory and pulling them down into the dark. And pull.
That's a form, right? Is that a pantoum or something like that?
No, I just started repeating words because I wanted to. It's no form.
It works.
It's just reverse. Yeah.
It works beautifully, actually, because you know, that extension of the moment, the emphasis of it, it works wonderfully.
Yeah.
And combined with the rest of the details that you use, it makes it a very haunting thought. There's an ominous sense to it. Something's going to happen, kind of like, you know, we're right at that moment, you know, and you got switchblade teeth that imagery was lovely also. You could be describing a clown, the serial killer clown, or something else, but, you know, it was great. In the dark. What happens in the dark?
Thank you, Rash. Yeah, I know. I don't know. And the repeating words is supposed to be ominous, so thank you for catching that. It was just it's something that I've seen some poets do that I admire, and I had never tried really to, I've never had the urge to do it. And then when I was writing this poem, because of like that echoing feeling, and that's another reason why I picked it, because the wind has that echoing, right? So the echoing feeling, I always feel like that is very ominous. So it's just how, I don't know, it's just how it came out. I did that with a few other poems, not too many, but it just has an effect to it that I do like. So thank you.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Into the dark. I actually noticed a couple of my poems end with into the dark, and I was like, I got to stop doing that.
It's a Sky Dark signature, into the dark.
Maybe that's what it is. But I noticed, I don't know what made me notice it, but I'm like, wait a minute, this one ends in the dark, and this one ends in the dark, and I'm like, I got to stop ending my poems.
and then there's the Bill Squire song. In the dark, anyway.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we have one more clip, and good, because we've got about 17 minutes. Time goes by when you're learning about stuff. Okay, so
spoil some peach pits
This is a long clip too. Okay, well, we're gonna listen to this whole thing. It is longer. We're not gonna have a long time to talk about the puka, but it's all right. But we'll learn about it anyway. But here is the third prompt. And a little bit of myth, a little bit of lore, and brought to you, obviously, by PBS, Public Service Announcement. There you go.
You spot a goblin crouched like a cat lying in wait. Just when you least expect it, you're on his back, and he's taking you on what will surely be the wildest and most terrifying ride of your life. The puka, a shape-shifting goblin, terrorizes his victims at night and plays cruel jokes. He carries unwilling riders through brambles and narrow cliffs, and bestows magical gifts? Existing somewhere between boogeyman, scapegoat, and temperamental fae, the known trickster animal spirit was once dreaded across Ireland, the Channel Islands, and England, and has survived the test of time. Don't believe me? Just ask Shakespeare. I'm Dr. Emily Zarka, and this is Monstrum. This monster's influence is demonstrated by its hotly debated etymology. Puka means goblin in Old English, but did that word come from Scandinavian, Germanic, or Celtic origins? Some scholars trace it back to Icelandic roots, others say Norwegian origins, and others Old Danish or Old Swedish. And there's arguments to be made for Irish, Welsh, and the Cornish etymology as well. That's a lot of colloquial contention. The commonality is that in every language, the term refers to a negative spirit, a mischievous monster. Because the definition is the same across so many different languages, yet no one clear origin, to me, that suggests that this monster was around for a very long time before spreading across Northern Europe. Like a lot of monsters, the name might differ depending on who is telling the tale and where they are telling it, but the basic characteristics are consistent. An expressly animal spirit, they threaten death but do not kill, they can bestow kindness but generally prefer cruelty, and they are encountered at night and during the harvest time, where they frolic through the hay. While these shape-shifting tricksters can choose to take on any animal form, they favor cows, dogs, donkeys, goats, and horses, particularly a small, shaggy pony. In some regions, they even take on a diminutive humanoid form. Their otherworldly nature is indicated by completely black coloring or animal features like ears, horns, or a tail. The puka seems to exist mainly to harass late-night travelers, spooking them out of their wits. Their favorite way to do this? Unexpected rides through the countryside. Yep. The monster lies in wait before popping up, tossing their victim onto their backs, and bolting across the landscape with little thought for the safety or comfort of the rider. They intentionally run through thorny bushes, alongside stone walls, and on the precipice of cliffs. These death-defying rides rarely result in serious harm to the rider, other than the pure terror. In some instances, the monster takes pity on the naive traveler and might happily trot them home. But it is also known to spoil wild fruits by urinating or spitting on them. In one story, the puka gives a magical flute to a piper that makes him famous, but only after playing a few cruel jokes on him first. According to legend, this is the same flute that makes people dance until they die, which seems like a questionable gift, to say the least. Another interesting trait of this monster, he talks. According to the tale, a farmhand, while putting away the cows after milking, finds himself tossed onto the back of a young horse. Throughout the night, the horse takes him on a rough, harrowing ride across the countryside. The next morning, quite bruised and worse for wear, he tells his boss of the encounter. The man's advice? Wear spurs. When the horse appears again, the young man asks to ride on its back, but the cunning creature seems to sense something is afoot. It asks, "Have you the sharp things on?" When the farmhand confirms he does, the horse retreats. But this is not the last the farmhand will see of the monster. Returning from a party one night, the man is startled when a horse jumps off the path and knocks him down, covering the man with his body in a protective stance. A bright light blasts down on the path at that same moment. The creature rises, stating that it saved him from being killed by a spirit. When the farmhand asks who saved him, the horse replies, "I am the puka." There are many variations of this puka tale. The bright light may be interpreted as a demonic force, but more commonly the spirit or spirits the story is referring to are the good people, the fae folk. In every version of this legend, and there are a lot, the puka never calls the spurs by their name. The monster refers to them only as sharp things, regardless of if the story is told in English, Gaelic, or any other language. The puka's aversion is important enough that even in one story where the creature attacks a fisherman, the man is able to defeat the puka by attaching a row of hooks on his heels like spurs. Spurs are used to control horses, so why would a supernatural being have such a hatred of the sharp things? Well, spurs are traditionally made from steel or iron. Those of you with a little knowledge of the fae might recognize the folkloric significance of iron, which is said to deter or injure them. The puka's reluctance to even speak the word for spur might be a nod to this tradition and could hint at the monster's own lineage. The puka's connection to the good people of Celtic lore reiterates that its origins are quite old. While monks who came to Ireland started writing down these traditions around the 17th century, be assured that oral storytelling was an integral part of Irish culture long before that. And remember, these stories are not memorized scripts, but ever-changing performances between Shanachie, traditional Gaelic storytellers, and audience. As Christianity's influence...
And audience. I was just not even paying attention to you, apparently, because I'm like, why are you talking about spurs? I was so out of it. So you knew a little bit about the story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. You're your own Puka master. Listen, Hatter, why you called 10 minutes before? I just love you, man. Hi, Hatter.
Hi. I didn't know it was an early show.
Yeah, mine are always eight.
I'm okay.
And very, very rarely, sometimes if I have to push it back to 9, I may. But I have school in the morning.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
You can have your
show anytime
you want.
I usually have it. But listen, real quick, I cut my puka off a little bit early because I want you to read me a poem.
Okay.
And I have 10 minutes left, so that's great. You can bring me any spooky poem we've read, well, we listened to, The Ray Bradbury, The Wind. We talked about clowns. We talked about dark things. We were just all
apples
over the place tonight.
Apples.
Yeah.
There's some leftover pie from Deb if you want.
Yeah,
I would not eat it.
Yeah, it's poison pie. I would not eat it. And I'm sorry to any listener who wanted to hear more about the puka and conversation, but maybe Rack and I will throw it around the next down the tube just for fun and just talk about it for a little bit then because we have to cut it off a little bit short now. But do you have a poem? My topic list is – I deleted it already, so just throw it up right on the board, Hatter, and we'll get some spooky. Yeah, whatever. Just put anything down. Yeah, I don't even care.
Okay.
It's a poem. I like it. Hopefully it's seasonally spooky, but yeah.
Okay. Give me one minute. Pretty please.
Okay, well, while you're doing that, I'm going to talk about my closeout music, and that will save me some time. We are closing out with Lullaby of Woe. Absolutely love it. And it's by Ashley Serena. Love her, too. She's on YouTube. In her own words, I am an independent freelance musician based in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. I began composing on the piano at the age of 7 and found my voice a little later at the age of 16 after landing a lead role in a local historical musical. Since then, I have trained with multiple vocal coaches along with percussive and woodwind instructors who have helped me to gain proficiency, I don't know why I can't read right now, on the silver flute, penny whistle, and several other instruments. And you can totally hear this in her music, and I love it. She does covers. She does originals. Really need to check her out. I really love her, actually. She's one of my favorite people to do covers. And her original work is quite brilliant, too. All right. Hatter, are you ready now?
Yeah, could you read it for me, though?
Oh, my gosh, you've got demands.
I know. My eyes aren't working real well right now.
I'm just giving you that time. You don't have to be sorry. I love you, man. I just put it on the board.
Please, this guy.
Please. This is epic. I hope I don't mess this up. I can't even pre-read this. This is a lot. Okay. I've seen this photo before. I really like it. Let me make my screen a little bit bigger. Okay, you got all this fancy writing. Okay. The Crow by J. Hatter. That morning, I sat watching the trees when I noticed something staring at me. Two dark little eyes, in concert with mine, drew a cowardly feeling that raced down my spine. When a whistling pot I rose to attend, the window left open. I heard him fly in. On the chair he lit just as he pleased, with those black little eyes staring at me. He began to speak in riddles and rhymes. The words he spoke could have been mine. A life you possessed alone these past years, to those you left it brought sorrow and tears. Why are you here, and how do you know? He ruffled his feathers, for I am a crow. I spoke to you once while at the stream.
I am the one you hear when lost in your dreams. I've come to help you and to guide you home. Be lost. You will if you try it alone. I will show you how, and with me as your guide, I shall give you wings. I will teach you to fly. Set in confusion, I've only one thing to say. Is it possible, please, that I not leave here today? His answer was quick as he raised his voice. It's already happened. You have no choice. Talked we sat for hours, it seemed. A talking crow he sat as if in a dream. With wings from a blackbird, I flew to the sky, effortlessly soaring with a crow at my side. Feel not the saddened, for I am free, now free of the sins and regrets that weighed so on me. Without the thoughts I believed I would know, flying alongside this rambling crow. I know I now take leave of things I believed would help me through this time. There's no place like home, but I feel I'm alone, learning how to write this in rhyme. There's one thing you'll take, is the how much you make to the heavens high above. With no map to see where it might be, with no map to see where it might be, you'll get to carry all of your love. End poem. I feel like I've read this before. I don't have a comment on here, but I know I've read this. I'm not sure why I never commented it, but I know I read this before. It's on my bookmarks. Oh, no, I just put it on my bookmarks so I can comment. Yeah, I definitely read this before, but I just don't have a comment on here. I'm not really sure why. This is brilliant. I really love this one, and I'm glad I got to that you brought it because I just love it. It's definitely an epic poem. I think if you were to make like a list of your top poems that I've read and that you might want to showcase, this would definitely be in those top showcase poems. Because this is brilliant. The way that it flows, the story that it tells. I love the dialogue going back and forth, and how they have their own characteristics and they have their own personality. And you can see it by the way they speak, how they answer, and how the narrator introduces them, which I also love, like how the narrator is. It is the person, but it still feels distant when he's telling it. It still feels like a third party, even though it is the other person. But it's just like a personal feel, but yet separate because you're bringing in his dialogue too, which I really liked. The two dark little eyes, I loved that part. And there were so many parts. I can't even tell you, pick one. But I love the contemplation towards the end when it starts to get really theoretical and you start to go in the mind, like, how have you been here? We're going to, well, you know what? I'm already part of you, so it's too late. I've already become. So is it the person talking to themselves, or are they separate entities? It's really up to the reader to decide, because you kind of leave it vague and kind of mysterious in that way. And perhaps you had a vision of what you think it is, but I still think it is left up to the reader because of the way that you kind of set up the poem. Really, really well done, Hannah. I really enjoyed it. Let me
say something. Maybe this will remind you even more. I spent over a year writing this, and in the author's notes, explains, the Yaqui Indians revere the crow as a spirit guide that can travel to the afterlife. And I tried for over a year to put this in a poem that I was happy with. What happens to our reality when it is our time? When it is our time is something that we've been written and feared since the beginning of time. This is my attempt to express my feelings. Thank you, and I hope you all enjoy reading it. Sky. Thank you.
I definitely did. I think there are some pieces that are definitely like showcase. Like this is like you're gonna showcase. If you want somebody to read your bulk of a work, there are some pieces that somebody might pull out. Like for me, I know.
I know which ones I would pull out. If I were to say, okay, I only have 5 poems to show people, to make them interested in something else that I've written, or to read the bulk of my writing, which ones am I going to pull out?
Yeah.
You only have, say, 10 poems. 10 poems out of years of writing. How do you pull that out? And not to say that, you know, this, so if you have 10 poems to pick to say, you should read more of my writing and this is why, I think this would be in your top 10. I think this is a brilliant one. Rex, what do you think?
Yeah, I like this a lot, Hatter. You know, the idea of the crow, there's something about the way that a crow moves. You know, a pigeon has that head bob, but the crow is always feels like he's analyzing everything. He's tilting his head. He's contemplating. He's studying. And
you know what that is?
I'm sorry?
You know what that is? What that is, they found, is every other, besides the corvids, the blackbirds, magpies and such, every other animal will watch you. They'll stare at your eyes, what you're looking at. A crow will look at what you're doing. He's paying attention to what you're having in hands rather than your eyes and your movements. So
right.
That's the difference between them. Yeah.
So you incorporated that in the conversation, you know, so knowing the crow or being familiar with him and how he moves and everything, it works its way into the conversation very well. So it's not like you're conversing with yourself, even though the crow could be repeating you. But, you know, crows don't talk either. So, you know, that adds to the fantasy of it. It's like, wait a minute. Having this conversation with a bird that normally doesn't talk. So is he dreaming? Is he not dreaming? So it adds another layer to it because of that, too. You know, I could see being influenced by the Indians as well.
That's a farm that they can't talk.
They can be trained. The Indian view of animal life is beautiful. You know, and I think partly because of the crow's mannerisms as well, that they would look at it like that. You know, and then, you know, Poe had his view of the crow as well. And I can't help but think of, Brandon Lee also when I hear the crow because of the movie. So, you know, there's a lot tied to just the bird itself. So calling it the crow, you bring a lot into it.
You think about it, when do you see crows move? It's at dusk and dawn. So that's the magic hour that you can step through the doorway to the afterlife of the other life other than here is the magic hour before dawn and dusk. So that's when you see the crows. Right. That's when the crows are moving. So they're the guides.
Birds.
All right, guys. It was excellent poem. We are over our time, and I don't like to go too far over.
Sorry.
It cuts into. It's okay. No, it's okay. I loved hearing the poem, and I wonderful comment. Thank you, Rack. And I'm glad you made it. I would rather you make it and be able to fit in so that I can hear your poetry. And so, totally fine. Because that was brilliant, and I appreciate it. I absolutely loved it. But I'm going to cut you guys off because I'm going to say my thank yous. Thank you, Rack and Tour, Deborah Lee, and Hatter, and LG. Don't forget LG because we kicked it off with LG Mace, for all calling and or submitting and enjoying the topics and the conversation. And I hope you loved that. And if you get a chance, Hatter, you should listen to the playback because – I played a story, and it was really cool by Ray Bradbury. And I really think you'd like it. I think it's something that you would like. I'm like I told Rack, I'll probably bring something like that again. And I'll see you guys all tomorrow. I'm on tomorrow. Bring me a spooky poem tomorrow, Hatter. And I start at 8. So we're going to be doing the Haunting of Bly Manor at 8 Eastern Standard Time.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, guys.
Nevermore.
Thank you, Sky. All right.
Always. Thank you so much. Here we go.
I. Who's asleep?